From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made in schools across the United States if they reopen in the fall. K through 12 teachers have expressed concerns about re-entering the classroom, and unions are threatening to strike if schools do open their doors. But there's another group of school workers, frontline support staff, who also have concerns. They're often not heard in these conversations. Talking about bus drivers, cafeteria workers, administrative personnel, security guards, cleaning staff, others whose jobs require them to be in school buildings or around teachers and students on a daily basis. The nonprofit site, The 74 Million, reports that half of all school employees are not teachers. This group of often unrecognized essential workers have expressed some concerns about safety, the availability of cleaning supplies and PPE, and how to best protect themselves and students while doing their jobs. We're essentially giving them the floor this hour to address those issues and hear their perspectives on working during the pandemic. And I want to start by bringing in Dan DiClemente, who is the president of Bente AFSCME Local 2419. Dan, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm good, Evan. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I hope all the listeners are well during this difficult time of living through a pandemic.
It is still, I think, hard to believe, but here we are headed for the fall now. And in a moment, we're going to bring in some other workers who are with Dan, and I want to stress to listeners here, in this case, you're going to hear half a dozen guests this hour. They are, as I understand it, all together. They're going to speak on speakerphone. It was their choice to do it that way, just a comfort thing. We respect that, and we will introduce and bring them in a moment. But let me start by talking to Dan about, first of all, how you see the landscape of work and safety, assuming we're going to see quite a lot of reopening. And by now, Dan, you know, we've got a pretty good handle on what a lot of districts are doing. Officially, the state will decide by tomorrow whether to green light what the districts have proposed. Every district has offered a different idea on this. So some hybrid, some 4 days a week, you know, some 5 days a week in school, some 5 days a week for students up to a certain age, and then a hybrid as they get older. So there's a lot of different scenarios. Governor Cuomo said earlier this week that it's going to be up to parents to decide what they want to do with kids going back, essentially hinting that the state's not going to block it, not with the current numbers of viral transmission right now. Of course, that could change in the future. But with Dan, when we talk about this, we often talk about, well, what do teachers think? What do teachers think? And there's a good reason. We're going to talk to teachers next week. They certainly matter very much here. But do you feel like other employees are left out too often? And I'll put myself on the list of journalists like myself. Do we leave out other workers too often, Dan?
Well, I will say this, Evan. It's not often that we get a chance to come on to programs like this to talk about the important work that our members do. They do a lot of that work behind the scenes. Most of the time when our members are recognized, it's because something went wrong. I will tell you that throughout this entire pandemic, a lot of my members have been working. You know, the community made a decision and the school district and the city made a decision that we're going to feed kids throughout this pandemic, because if we don't, many of them will not get a meal. So when that decision was made, we insisted upon, and keep in mind, this is back probably in March when things were just ramping up. No one knew much. The health professionals weren't really pushing mask requirements, but we felt that they were important for our members. We insisted upon them at our central kitchen, which is kind of an assembly line for putting together cold meals and hot meals. We insisted on social distancing, and to the district's credit, they did provide their PPE for us. They provided everyone with masks, even though they weren't required, and that's something the union insisted upon. Now, we live in an era where everyone has to wear a mask, so you can see that this virus has everybody guessing, and people still are afraid of how they can contract it, and especially with our cleaning staff, our security staff, who's in direct line with the public. So there's a lot of unanswered questions here, but I will say that obviously the safest thing that can be done for the staff, the students, the parents, is to not have school, right? Then no one comes to the building, no one congregates. But the community also has an important decision to make. as they made when they started to feed the kid, kept feeding the kids throughout the pandemic, and still do to this day, even over the summer. They have a decision to make. Can all of these kids learn it at home? And if they can't all learn it at home, and some of them need to be in the classroom, well, then we move towards, well, how can we make that setting the safest it can possibly be? I'm not saying you give the community free rein, because we see what happens in Florida when some people take control of the situation without any guidelines. They have COVID parties, and they're in the middle of pool bars all congregating together. But that's why the state puts forward guidelines. And if the state says, if you meet these certain set of guidelines, you can open, then we have to make sure that our members who provide those vital services to the kids are as safe as possible, that the students coming in are as safe as possible. And that's really what we're planning on doing.
Is there a scenario, Dan, in which you could see large numbers of workers just deciding that this is too much, that this is not safe enough, that this the risk is too high, the risk is too much? How do you start to draw lines in a scenario like this that, frankly, you, myself, I mean, nobody envisioned having to make these kind of decisions before this year? How do you start to draw those lines on what is required?
So when you look at the state guidelines put forth, a lot of PPE is required. A lot of, in some cases, modifying the buildings is required. Those plans have to be approved. I advocate for, okay, we should try to provide something to where the kids can learn on-site in the buildings. And keep in mind, I'm totally opposed to all in-person learning, because those guidelines cannot be met. But if you, like the district is talking pre-K through 4, along with specialized services, I think that that's something that could be accommodated based on the fact that they're going to have two different groups going, Group A going Monday and Tuesday, Group B going Thursday and Friday, and all remote learning on Wednesdays. I think that kind of scenario could work based on how far kids are apart. But again, this all depends on, can they get the proper PPE in time for school opening? So we're for the plan put forth, provided they can put all of those things in place. And that's kind of the question right now. Can all of that stuff be put into place by the time school begins?
What is, what do you think is the hardest bar for districts to clear in terms of reassuring safety? Is it PPE? Is it an approach to what to do if someone has an infection? I mean, what's the hardest bar to clear?
I think that is no matter how safe the district tries to make it for people, people are still going to be apprehensive due to the virus. And I mean, as I stated, it's difficult. It's difficult for any building to open without some concern. But again, I look at Tops and Wegmans, right? I mean, the community made a decision. Yes, Tops and Wegmans, they provide other things like curbside pickup, or they may even deliver to your home in certain circumstances. But many of the people wanted the stores open, and so they went into the stores. The stores remained open. The cashiers remained employed, and they put up the plastic or the glass in between you and the cashier. They made sure that everybody coming into the store wears a mask. All they can do, really, I think, is make it as safe as they possibly can and make sure that they're following the guidelines. And as I said, the community really has to make a determination. Do we think it's important to make sure that some kids aren't left behind by having them coming in person to the schools to learn?
Talking to Dan DiClemente, who is the president of Bente AFSCME Local 2419. How many workers you representing, Dan?
We have 1,260, roughly.
Is this one of those cases where, you know, the feedback from your workers is across the board? I mean, do you have some who want to go back to, you know, yesterday, and some who don't want to go back until this pandemic is over? Is it a wide range, Dan?
It is a wide range, and we have people in different fields. So, for example, clerical workers, we want to see that their main offices are protected, that there's some kind of booth put up or glass or partition to make sure that they're protected. We have custodial workers who want to make sure that they have the proper PPE, they have the proper disinfectants. We have transportation, like bus drivers. And this is one bone of contention, Evan, and we can talk about this when one of our bus drivers comes on. But temperature checks. They're talking about doing temperature checks at the buildings, but the bus drivers are concerned, well, if there's no temperature check prior to them getting on the bus. And in the plane, it states that the parents have to conduct them. But we know some parents won't. We know some parents may just have to send their kid to school because they have to go to work, even if their temperature is high. So that is one concern that we're bringing forward. Hey, what about the bus drivers? Why put a kid on the bus who already has the virus? So we are trying to address every one of our unit's concerns. We have security staff that's obviously very concerned. They're hands-on with the kids. They have to try to keep them separated. They have to try to keep them social distanced. They'll have to try to keep them to where they keep their masks on. There's all different avenues here. I will say that I'm advocating anyway for any staff member who can perform their job at home to continue to do so. If there's no reason to bring the person in, then don't. But we have, unfortunately, a lot of physical labor where the people have to be on site.
Well, Dan, if I could, what I'd like to do is maybe talk to some of the workers one by one. If you can, you're going to stay on the line and we can chat with you as well, I hope. Is that right, Dan? Is that good?
That sounds good, Evan.
Okay, so let me start with, you mentioned bus drivers. Let me bring in Wilbert Nevado, who is a bus driver for the Rochester City School District. If I could, Wilbert, are you there?
He's hit. I'm going to have to put him on the speakerphone, okay, Evan?
That's okay.
Give me 1 second.
Sure.
Okay.
Now we're on hold. Hey, we're doing this for the safety and the comfort of the workers, so that we understand. We're going to have Wilbert in just a moment. We're also going to talk to school safety officers. We're going to sing Piano Man on the hold music. That's good hold music, by the way. Was that? No, we can't? Was that ours? That wasn't ours. Oh, we don't know the rights. We can't even play their hold music.
Sorry, Evan.
That's okay. We liked your hold music, but we don't own the rights to it, so we couldn't play it, Dan.
Okay. All right, so Wilbert's here.
All right, so let me start with Wilbert Nevado, a bus driver for the RCSD. Wilbert, how are you?
Good, yourself?
I'm good. Thank you for making the time. So could you start just by telling us your thoughts, your concerns about going back to work? Tell me sort of everything that's going through your mind as a bus driver as you think about going back to work, Wilbert.
Well, as a bus driver for 30 years, our priority always been safety. So our concern is to make sure that those kids get to school and home safe. I think the most things that we're thinking about is we got to do whatever it takes to make sure that those kids are safe. And if we got one of the things that we think is by checking the temperature, before they come on the bus, because it's gonna avoid a lot of issues, taking them without temperature, taking the temperature to school, and then the school finds out that one of the kids is got high temperature, then what's going to happen? You know what I'm saying? So one of the most important things is about temperature.
Okay. What would make that situation better, Wilbert?
To make it better to check the temperature. Thermometers. To make sure that we check their temperature before they come in the bus.
You're talking the parents' job to do that.
Yes, but can we trust the parents that they will not do their jobs? A lot of parents, they just want to get rid of the kids no matter what.
Hmm. Okay. How concerned about your own safety are you, Wilbert?
My own safety, I'm going to have a mask. I'm going to have a face shield. So I think we're going to be okay. We're not going to have gloves on. So our concern is, again, the kids that can infect some other kids.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm certainly glad to hear that you feel pretty comfortable, it sounds like, with your own health and your own safety. And when you say that, I understand the point you make. I mean, it was sort of made maybe slangily to say parents just want to get rid of their kids. I think what you're saying is parents have to, Sometimes they go to work. Sometimes they have to just say, I'm putting the kid on the bus no matter what here. But do you trust parents to do the right thing in this pandemic, generally speaking, Wilbert?
Well, you know, there's always a question about it. You know, we hope that they all do. So that's the only way to stop the spreading of this virus. But again, you know, I'm hoping that everybody does what's got to be done.
What would it take for you to decide it's not worth it? I'm not going to go back. I mean, what is your line that's got to be, you know, sort of crossed? And where would you be sort of deciding, Wilbert, that I'm not going to work? This is not working.
I mean, to open the school, they got to have something in place, okay? So we got to see what's the state mandate and the city is going to be asking for us, for everybody to do, you know? And I'm pretty sure the city and everybody else got to be on the same page. And we just got to follow their lead, you know?
Well, and Wilbert, one of the things that I think we've heard a lot of about in the last few weeks from administrators especially is the challenge of transportation. In other words, many students have to take the bus for a lot of districts, but there's an expectation of physical distancing, and buses tend to be packed with kids. Is that a concern for you? Do you feel like there's a good plan to keep kids spaced out pretty well?
They got to be spaced out, yes. They got to be spaced out. That's what I'm saying, that the guidance that the state put on, you know, it's got to be followed. And if we have every other seat, that would help. If we have, besides the drivers, a bus attendant that can make sure that the kids keep their face mask on, that would help. There's a lot of things that can be done so we can get this thing going, you know, in a safe way.
Talking to Wilbert Nevado, who is a bus driver for the Rochester City School District. We've been hearing from Dan DiClemente, the president of Bente AFSCME Local 2419, as we talk about going back to school and the workers that aren't always represented in these conversations. It's not just teachers with these concerns and questions. It's people like Wilbert. If I could, I'd like to turn to Bonnie Ferrari, who's cook manager for food services at the RCSD. Bonnie, are you there?
I am here.
Well, it's nice to talk to you. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Well, and so let's talk about what comes to mind first for you. What does safety mean for you when you think about going back? And I guess I'd like you to answer that question and also maybe describe for listeners what day-to-day work entails for you.
Well, as a manager in a kitchen, you have a bunch of people working there, but you can, I mean, the kitchen's pretty big, so you can keep everybody physically or socially distanced. We'll be getting a mask. We'll be having face shields. We have gloves. We have ready access to hand sanitizers, wipes. So we have all those things in place. We just want to feed the kids, which is what we've been doing since the very beginning. Food service were considered essential staff, so we've been on the front lines daily, you know, making sure kids have been fed.
Is there anything that stands out to you that says this doesn't work or this is not safe enough or I don't like the way they're doing X, Y, or Z?
No, I think they've been doing everything that they can do. I really do. I don't see any barriers right now. As long as they follow the guidance from the governor, and you know, and the guidelines that he puts in place, I think it'll be fine. We support the hybrid version, whatever it takes to get kids not only fed but you know educated.
Do you feel, first of all, like a frontline worker, an essential worker, and do you think most Americans view people in your line of work that way?
I think they should, because we're feeding their children, making sure that, you know, like we've been doing right along, we've got, you know, sites opened up, and actually a lot of the parents come in and bring food home, breakfast and lunch, on a daily basis. We're open from 8:45 to 1:15 every day. I feel that we're essential. I would hope that they would feel the same way.
Yeah, I certainly hear that. Do you have colleagues who are concerned about working, either continuing to work or coming back to work in the fall, because of either their age and concern about the virus, or, you know, pre-existing conditions, et cetera. Has anyone expressed those kind of concerns to you?
Yes. Yes, they have. There's so many different variables, and we, you know, the masks, the face shields, the gloves, the sanitizer, I mean, you do what you can, trying to keep everybody safe. I mean, I don't see a problem. I don't really hear a lot of pushback, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, I appreciate what you're doing, and I think the workers we're talking to today, I don't say this in sort of a patronizing way. There's no doubt you're essential, and the work that you're doing in this community, especially for kids who need these food services, is certainly essential. So that's Bonnie Ferrari's perspective. You just heard Wilbert Nevado. And listeners, if you've got questions or comments, I mean, we do want to hear from the listening audience about essential workers and workers from a lot of different backgrounds and job types as we think about going back to school and making sure everybody is safe and protected as best we can. I mean, there's no such thing as zero risk, but what's the right combination of safety protocols and protections here? It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI here in Rochester, 263-9994. I want to turn to Victor Wilson, who's a custodian at Franklin. Hi, Victor. How are you?
Great. How are you doing today?
Well, good. Tell us about how long you've been at Franklin.
I've been at Franklin campus for about 5 years.
How do you like the work?
It's very fun, a lot of fun, pleasing, rewarding.
What goes through your mind when you think about, you know, thousands of kids coming back to school and workers across the country in schools going back? I mean, what's it like for you?
My biggest concern is how can we do this safely to make sure that the staff is safe and also the kids.
What does that mean for you? What does safety reasonably look like for you, Victor? What do you think should be done?
I think as long as staff and students are wearing protective gear, hands are being washed and sanitized, social distancing being followed, limited numbers of kids, using the hybrid program would probably work. I think those issues, concerns are kept into place. We should be fine.
You want kids and staff wearing masks, it sounds like.
Yes.
Are you concerned that there is, I don't think it's a majority of Americans by any means, but there's a pretty vocal anti-mask strain. Are you concerned about that, Victor?
I mean, there are people who don't want to come. They have that right not to come to school or come to work or send their kid to school. That's their decision.
But are you concerned that the idea that some people ridicule the idea of masks or say that they're not going to wear them, or maybe even tell kids, you know, they're raising their children and maybe they're telling their kids, we're not going to wear masks. Does that worry you, or do you think, you know, when those kids come on campus, that they're in a school setting, they're going to be wearing masks?
I would say it's, once they're on campus, it's in a school setting, and there's no choice there.
Okay.
If the parent feels different, then they keep them home.
Okay. Is there any part of you that thinks that you wouldn't come back and do this work under certain circumstances, or does it sound like you're happy to be going to work?
I'm happy to be coming to work each day. I mean, someone has to do it. I don't have a problem doing it.
Okay. Bonnie Ferrari, can I also ask you just how you feel about masking? I mean, any concern that people aren't going to follow the masking guidelines, whatever those guidelines turn out to be?
No, I don't have any concerns about that. Right now, everybody's wearing a mask. It's not even a question. We're given a mask. We put it on. It's just that's what needs to happen. That's part of the guidelines to get people working, to get kids fed. No problem at all. If it's a face shield and a mask, if it's gloves, whatever it takes.
All right, well, let me grab our first phone call from a listener on this subject. This is Kathy calling from Ontario County. Go ahead, Kathy.
Well, hello. I'll get you off the speakerphone. My husband is a part-time school bus driver, and I'm a retired early childhood teacher. And we recently went over to fill out an employee survey. It was his survey, but we both wanted to read it. And the thing that concerns me, there's a lot of good stuff, you know. But it says at the end, note, all students will be required to wear masks at all times. However, the state has said that if a child refuses to wear a mask, that we cannot deny them transportation. Maximum of 25 students per bus that will be properly distanced. Good. That's good. But, and frankly, he drives all the ages, okay? So, wow, I can't, you know, as an early childhood teacher, if you're there in the, I can't imagine how they're going to manage this with the kids, even if the parents, which I have heard of several parents in our area who think this is a hoax. Okay, so they're feeding that to the little ones. I don't know about the older ones. They might get it, but the younger ones. Okay, so, you know, he's driving the bus, he glances in the mirror, and what if masks are off? And, you know, so I'm not comfortable with that. And nobody has talked, as far as I know, about the intense emotional burden. Another, I was a therapist in a past life, too, of feeling responsible for parents and grandparents or caregivers' illnesses, hospitalizations, worst-case scenario, their death. Not that this is easy. This is not simple. Of course parents feel the need to get their kids back to school. Of course many kids want to get back in school. But I am very, I think that parents need to be in a meeting, all parents in a meeting, and they can make the school the heavy, even if they don't believe in it. We were at a grad party that was supposed to be socially distanced, and I'm going to tell you what, none of those kids had masks, and none of those kids, we were socially distanced, but none of those kids had masks, and none of them, they were congregated all close together. Mm-hmm. And maybe they see each other all the time and they're in this funny bubble or something, but, you know, this is not, it sounds like, okay, we're doing as much as we can, but it's not this simple. And there's low incidence here, so people really don't take it as seriously.
So, Kathy, can I ask you a couple quick questions before I turn it over to our guests as well?
Sure.
When you talk about going to a grad party, how many people were at that party?
Probably about 40 people.
40 people in like a backyard or something?
It was, well, not where the kids were eating. They were at tables very close together.
Okay.
And then they were standing around. There's a deck and, you know, they were standing around. They were all talking right to each other. The parents were a little better, all the parents, but not all of them. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm going to say the six of us. Yeah. But, you know.
And you said your husband drives a bus now.
He drives the school bus. It's a part-time thing.
Sure, sure.
Retirement, you know, for retirement.
Are you scared for him?
I'm not. I know he has that I-95 mask, and I'm not as afraid for him as I am, unless things got out of control, and I'm trusting. You know, you say, do you trust the parents? What do you mean, really, trust the parents? You can't just you know, trust the parents to do the right thing. You know, they might do the right thing, and then the kid says, oh, my God, you know, there's kids that have sensitivities, kids with, you know, different issues. It is just going to be tricky, but maybe they can do it. Maybe it's going to, but I think that what they need to do is be really communicate with the parents before this happens.
Well, so
find a way to have meetings.
Here's one more idea from a listener for you on this, Kathy, and then I'll turn it over to our guests on the line with us. Gabe writes to us to say, Evan, how about equipping the bus driver with an aide, a nurse, to check the temperatures of kids before they even get on the bus? What I'm proposing is that every bus should be assigned a bus attendant, and the attendant will be trained to check the temperatures of kids before the student gets on. Attendant disembarks the bus, meets kids in the driveway or outside the bus to check the temperature first. What do you think?
Well, I think that's a great idea, and let's know that some kids are asymptomatic.
A lot of kids are.
They've got the virus before any symptoms show up, and we don't really have, I don't think we have the medical information necessary to assess whether those kids can pass the virus. So that's nice, you know, but
okay.
I don't know. know. So, but anyway, hopefully it will. If they're wearing their masks, I think they're good to go. And if we have the hand sanitizer on the bus, and everybody hand sanitizes before they get on the bus, something like that would be a good one. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, thank you for the phone call, and good luck to you and your family. And we appreciate the perspective. And I'm thinking about your husband and many other people in these scenarios. Thank you, Kathy.
That's right. Okay, you're welcome.
Well,
bye-bye.
Let me turn to Wilbert Nevado, who's a bus driver for the Rochester City School District. So Kathy's saying, her husband looks back and sees kids who got on the bus wearing a mask, and they're on the bus, they're not wearing masks. You know, what happens next? What does happen next in that situation, Wilbert?
Well, if we would have monitors in each bus, it would make it a little easier, because that monitor would be making sure that those kids keep their mask on.
Do you know, is that part of any proposal that's likely to happen, Wilbert?
Well, I believe so.
Okay.
Evan, this is Dan.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
Did make that proposal. We're waiting on the district to get back to us. All I can speak for is the members that we represent. So about a little over a half of the buses have a bus monitor or bus attendant. There's probably 30 to 40% that do not, and we've requested they put an attendant on every single bus. Now, I can't speak for some of the transportation is contracted out, so I'm not sure what that would entail with the other companies. But for our buses, you're talking about possibly it would be hiring about 30 bus attendants.
Okay. And do you know, Dan, remind our listeners what school district we're talking about here.
Rochester City School District.
Do you know if suburban and other districts plan to do the same with their buses?
I do not.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that.
I think it could be different in a lot of different places. And let me, let me remind listeners, we're talking to a number of workers in the Rochester City School District, from bus drivers to custodians, secretaries, cook managers, safety officers. These are workers who often aren't included in the conversations about reopening schools, and their perspective on safety is very, very important for obvious reasons. So Dan DiClemente is the president of Bente AFSCME Local 2419. And after our only break of the hour, we're going to bring in a couple of other workers for their perspectives as well. If you want to share your thoughts about reopening, we'll take more of your comments as well. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. We're right back after our only break of the hour. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, Kathleen Groutman joins us on the program, the superintendent of the Greece Central School District. She'll talk about Greece's plans for reopening schools in a hybrid fashion. She'll also talk about the challenge facing all local districts, the considerations for health, for teachers, for safety, and students, and more. Superintendent Groutman, Friday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. One more comment on the busing situation comes from a listener named Patrick, who emails the following. Perhaps the solution is a COVID kids mobile daycare, an extra vehicle that accompanies the bus that takes children with high temperatures to a quarantine or daycare or doctor or hospital space for the day. The bus matron should check the temperature of each kid, and then a decision should be made, and a van could pick them up and take them to a safe place for everyone until the matter can be rectified with the parent or guardian. That comes from Patrick. Dan, I don't know what the expense would be to have an extra vehicle with every bus. I don't know if that's been proposed or not. Is that realistic?
That has not been proposed. And the way it's supposed to work now, according to the guidelines, is, Evan, if a child is sick, if they're dropped off at school, the child is to go to, they call it an isolation room. The nurse kind of takes it from there, and then they're to wait there until the parent comes to pick them up. So that's going to be a bone of contention as well, because we know that some parents will be at work already. They won't be able to come and get the child, but that's the way it's written in the guidelines. So we're at a little bit of odds with the district on that one, because we don't want to subject our drivers to a kid who we know is sick especially when the guidelines state that the parent is responsible to come and pick the child up. So that's kind of where it is now.
All right. So again, just to explain what you think the policy should be then, given, you know, where you see that problem. How would exactly you draw it up?
I think one of the things that Wilbert had mentioned was you have the attendants on each bus and they perform temperature checks in the morning. That would alleviate some of the children, at least that were being transported from getting on the bus when we know that they have a high temperature. When it comes to the walkers, though, that's definitely an issue. And when they come to the school, if they have high temperature and they go to this room, solutions like the one your caller brought up, I don't know if the district would take it seriously because of the cost, but I think that they definitely need to think of some way to get the child back home if the parent doesn't come and pick the child up. I'm not advocating that our drivers put themselves in that position, especially when the guidelines say something different. And again, Evan, we have to comply with state guidelines, so I'm not sure if the district's answer wouldn't be, well, in the guidelines it says the parent picks the child up. That's the way it has to be. But we are on the realistic side, and we know that's not going to happen in every case.
All right, well, let me bring in Jessica Reinbold, lead secretary for the Rochester City School District. Jessica, are you there? How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. How long have you been with RCSD?
Oh, about 13 years.
And tell me your thoughts about working during a pandemic and what safety means for you.
Well, I think that, I've been meeting with the secretaries weekly via Zoom, and, you know, we have talked about what we need to be safe in the office because we are greeted by everybody, you know, parents, staff, and students. So we have talked about, you know, face shields and masks and sanitizer, everything else. There's also been talk of plexiglass being put up at the office counters. I know a couple of secretaries have requested to have it go even further and maybe have some plexiglass put up at our desks because oftentimes students and teachers and staff are coming behind the counters and, you know, coming right up to us because they need something.
Yeah, I think what you're describing, Jessica, is sort of the real life reality of a, you know, the traffic in a school buildings and offices. We can talk about plexiglass and mask wearing and space, but it's going to require just us to kind of retrain our habits, retrain what we're used to doing, because sometimes we're used to kind of going behind a desk or giving somebody a hug or, you know, all of these things that happened typically. How confident are you that students, staff, everyone involved in your building are going to be able to make those sort of habit changes to make sure the safety protocols are upheld?
I think that if everybody stays consistent and, you know, follows through, it's going to take a little time, especially for little ones. I have two kids who go to the city school district of my own, and I know that it's hard for little kids, but if we can just stay consistent and keep reminding everybody of the rules, I think that it's okay and it can be done.
What do you expect in terms of mask policy? I mean, you're going to go to work, and we've talked to so many different districts, and it's the one consistent thread I'm hearing is that when people are moving about the building, they're wearing masks, kids and staff included. But some districts want masks all day. Some say if you're sitting at your desk and you're stationary for a while, you can take the mask off. I mean, what's realistic for you?
Well, I'm not sure what our specific policy is going to be. I know that for me, if I'm in the building, I'm going to wear a mask as a courtesy to everybody around me. And whether I'm sitting or standing, to me, I feel like it doesn't make a difference. If I'm in a office with other people, I feel like it's just the best idea to wear one and keep everybody safe.
You concerned that there will be people, students or staff, who are lax about masks?
I think you see it now in public, so I'm sure some of that will spill over a little bit. But I can only do my part and hope that everybody else does the same.
Okay. Well, let me bring in Joe Jackson, who's a lead school safety officer at Edison Career and Technology High School. Joe, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How you doing, sir?
Good. Sir is my dad, but that's very kind. It's nice to talk to you. Joe, how long you been at Edison?
I've been at Edison since about 2002, 2003.
Oh, wow. And tell me about your thoughts about working during a pandemic and what safety means to you, Joe.
Well, right now we aren't working. My unit, the safety officers, there's no summer school, so we're not working right now. So it's kind of tough for some of my colleagues and myself to try to get through this pandemic.
What are you worried about the most?
Just our health and our safety. You know, we're the front line when the students get dropped off from their buses. Normally, our normal day would consist of scanning kids through, but that'll probably change with this new normal. We'll probably be more of a temperature check station instead of a security station as well.
That's interesting. I mean, you're right to say you're the front line. I mean, you're literally the front line when students are dropped off from buses. But now you're also known as frontline workers in an ongoing health crisis. Do you think of yourself as kind of frontline high-risk workers? And do you think the public views your work that way, Joe?
Yeah, we're very high risk. I'm not sure about how the public feels about us. Everybody has their own opinion. But yes, I'm highly concerned about our safety and what the district will have in place for us to be safe when we come to work.
Is there anything that would make you decide not to go to work, Joe?
Right now, I'm ready to get back to work. I don't think. Unless there's another outbreak that's outrageous, that would probably be the only thing that would stop us from coming back to work.
Okay. Dan DiClemente, it sounds to me like the workers represented here on this program, assuming it's representative of the many, many workers, and again, knowing that there's a range of opinions, as you and I have already discussed, but it does sound like there are a lot of workers who really are eager, if they're not working now, to get back or to keep working. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, and that's one of the reasons that we dub them working class heroes, Evan. They're the people on the front lines every day. We want to make sure that they're protected. Just to throw a little plug in here, we need some funding from the federal government through a stimulus package in order to make some of these safety concerns addressed, because schools don't have the money right now. The state, they're in a $14 billion deficit for next year. There's just not enough money to go around to pay for all this PPE. So we definitely want to make a pitch for everyone to contact their local congresswoman or man and make sure that that they get on the stick and pass some stimulus package that will help school districts.
Well, Dan, if I could just make an observation, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this. You know, the idea of union negotiations with districts, the stereotype is that, you know, one side, the non-union side will say, well, the union asks for the moon, you know, that you don't know how tight budgets are and you're asking for too much and you got to be realistic. And the unions say, you know, you've got to make sure that we're protected or that we have what we need. And it's a negotiation, and those things happen in a lot of different workspaces. But in this case, you know, you're not coming on this program to say, hey, RCSD, well, I mean, I'm sure you feel like they've got to do what they've got to do and they've got to protect workers. But you're really putting the onus on the federal government, which would have the power and really one of the only opportunities to offer more funding directly for districts, directly for state governments and municipalities and local to survive this thing, to do a lot more. Is that fair, or do you still feel like, you know, the district could be doing more?
I think that's fair. I think that this is a situation where it's a nationwide pandemic, and the federal government needs to come through on that. You cannot put a price on people's safety, and they need to make sure that they get something done for the people out there who are suffering. not just from the pandemic regarding safety issues, but also economical issues. I mean, this is going to be very difficult for everyone. I mean, we haven't even delved into the child care issues at stake for people who will be teaching their, you know, their kids are being taught remotely, and they have to figure out a way to stay home and still keep the roof over their heads. I mean, these are very difficult decisions that cannot simply be made by local governments who are broke. I mean, they really need to come through for all the students, for all of our staff, for all of the entire community out there, because these are things that are within their power to help out with. There's not much. A lot of things locally get solved locally, but this is something bigger than that. This is a nationwide pandemic, and they need to treat it as such, and they need to understand what kind of dilemma we're in.
Are you satisfied the district has taken this seriously?
I am satisfied that they've taken it seriously, as I mentioned in the beginning of the program, Evan. I'm just concerned about getting the equipment, getting the supplies on time for a safe opening. But I think that they're doing what they can to make sure that that the schools open safely. They've ordered the correct equipment. We've just got to see, does everything come in time, and how is it going to get paid for? And that's where we need the federal government to come in.
That sounds to me like a very constructive approach, a bridge-building approach from the union toward the district, and certainly the district, and we've heard from Leslie Meyer-Small, the superintendent. Dr. Meyer-Small has been on this program. We hope to have her on next week talking about reopening plans, and she has expressed everything that Dan is saying, which is that they want to do everything they possibly can to protect the workers, everyone who comes into the buildings, everyone who comes onto a bus. And it is a huge challenge. It's a logistical challenge. It is every challenge on every level here. Before the hour's up, just let me briefly read a comment from a teacher named Sheila, who sends it us and says, I feel that teachers are already getting dragged on social media and in groups online. And talking about our concerns will only make things worse. It's hard for us to talk about this. And remember that charter and private schools and large public school districts are not the same. That's an interesting comment. I'm curious to know. You know, Bonnie, you know, that's from a teacher, but do you feel like school employees are being essentially told, get back to work, don't complain? Do you feel like you've got the room to voice your concerns, whether it's social media or elsewhere, Bonnie?
No, I don't feel that way at all. I don't feel that the district's treating us that way.
Mm. I don't think that's a district question. I think what Sheila's saying is there's almost like a societal view on, hey, get back to work. You know, schools are going to open. Don't complain. You know, kids need you there. So don't bring up your concerns. That's kind of where her disposition is as a teacher. Are you not sensing anything like that, Bonnie?
I don't sense any of that.
Okay.
I have friends that are teachers. I have friends that are nurses. I have friends in all different areas, and I don't know that anybody feels that way.
Okay. Jessica, have you encountered any of that?
No, I think that everybody is, like I said, you know, we're stuck between two hard decisions. But at the end of the day, we have to try and put a plan in place that works best for everybody. And I understand teacher concerns, and I understand parents who need their kids to go back to school, especially young kids who are learning things like reading and writing. Those are important skills that can put them behind for a very long time if they're not properly taught those things. So I do see it back and forth a little bit but I think that's just naturally going to happen. You know, people are going to have opinions, but at the end of the day, we're stuck just between one difficult decision after another.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, there's not an ideal situation. If there were, every district would be doing it. I mean, there's just no question about that. And I think Sheila's concern is not that some parents or many people feel like, hey, we need kids back in school. Certainly many people feel that way, and we can all understand why. I think her concern is the lack of empathy people may feel for workers in schools who are nervous, who are worried, who have some anxiety or concerns about safety procedures. I think that's where the root of her concern is. You know, whether you're a teacher or a secretary or a cook manager, a custodian, a safety officer, a bus driver, you know, there's no situation where there's zero risk. And so the question is, how do you get to an appropriate level of risk? How do you feel comfortable with that? And if people are raising concerns, I think Sheila's saying, give them a little space to raise those concerns. Show some empathy. I'll let Dan DiClemente, last 20 seconds, final thoughts from you as we get ready to wrap this. Go ahead, Dan.
So I would say, Evan, that we will do everything we can to protect our workers, to make them safe, to make the schools safe for the students and the staff and the parents. But ultimately, if parents want the option to send their kids to school because they don't feel that their kids can get the same instruction by remote learning, they should be able to do so.
Well, Dan DiClemente, Wilbert Nevado, a bus driver, Joe Jackson, a lead school safety officer, Victor Wilson, a custodian, Bonnie Ferrari, a cook manager, Jessica Reinbold, a lead secretary. To all of you, good luck. I know you're working hard for the kids. Thanks for taking the time to share your perspectives today.
Thank you. Thank you, Evan.
And let's stay in touch on this. Thanks, listeners, for a lot of great feedback in these 2 hours today. Tomorrow, Kathleen Groutman, superintendent of the Greece Central School District, joins us on this program. That's when we will talk to you. Rob Braden's the engineer, Megan Max the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. We will talk to you tomorrow.